In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Welcome to another iSpy Radio Show, helping you get a little more intelligence each and every week by keeping an eye on big government. And even though big government is the focus of iSpy Radio, wouldn't it be nice if 1 year from now, we're on the path to a smaller government? That maybe in a few years, government has actually started to shrink, spending less, regulating less, interfering less. It wasn't that long ago that politics was not a 24/7, 365-day-a-year enterprise. It wasn't that long ago that we didn't focus all the time on politics. We elected politicians, and they actually disappeared for a couple of years. In 2007, Hillary got what was even then considered a late start into the presidential race. It was summer, and Obama and others had already jumped in, and she wondered aloud, well, why not wait until November? That's when her husband got in, a year out from the actual election. But not anymore. Now it's been pushed back by necessity to get into the race 17 months or more before the election, June of the year before. If you're elected to a four-year term, you will spend 35.4% of your time in office campaigning. Some of those politicians are only elected to a two-year term. Think of that. Wouldn't it be nice if government got so small that it didn't occupy so much of the news all the time? This is all wishful thinking, or is it? If Hillary gets elected, it will be wishful thinking. In fact, it'll be downright delusional thinking. If Hillary gets elected, government will explode, and I don't mean explode in a good way. It will grow exponentially. If you think government is big now, what will it look like under a Hillary administration? But it's not wishful thinking for a Trump administration. He already said that he wants to do away with the EPA and the Department of Education for starters. Now, getting rid of just those two bloated and costly departments alone will have a huge impact on the size of government. It's not just a matter of the number of employees. It's the cost those agencies impose on America. Getting rid of them will not only cost the government less, but put the balance back into the hands of private industry, individuals and families, and the states. That's what our framers intended. That's the constitutional way. Government now, though, is so overwhelming and so all-powerful, it's no wonder that it's a 24/7, 365 days a year affair. There is so much at stake. It's why in this election cycle, political passions are so front and center. It's why we see extremism on display, of hate for the other side. The left absolutely fears that their power is about to be taken away, and the right as well. They are terrified of losing their influence, of losing access to the vast amounts of money flowing from the fountain of government. America, under Obama, has become little better than a third world country, where some petty dictator is in charge and doles out his favors and his country's wealth and natural resources to his friends, political allies, and whatever foreign entities are willing to pony up and bribe him for access to resources. America has become a country so ripe with graft and corruption that we don't even bother to prosecute anymore. It's unprosecuted corruption. If you don't prosecute corruption, you will get more of it. And not just more cases of it, meaning quantity-wise, but deeper and deeper corruption as those in charge look the other way. Just think what will happen if Hillary is in charge, the worst offender in this country when it comes to unprosecuted corruption, sitting in the White House. It's one reason why Hillary is so confident of her win. The government, whose very duty it is to prosecute people exactly like her for doing things exactly like what she's done, won't prosecute her. She also knows so many millionaires and billionaires will fight tooth and nail and throw hundreds of millions of dollars at her and against her opponents because they will do anything they can to protect their scheme. Pay the Clintons a few hundred thousand and get a $10 million contract in return. It's why the media is openly throwing off any sense of professionalism or professional pride, any sense of decorum, any sense of journalistic standards to go after Trump. They do everything they can to get people to focus on what Trump said. These are just words. The media is doing it because they want to distract you from what Hillary has actually done. Remember this. Actions are the hard currency Actions are the true hard currency of politics because politicians' words are all too often counterfeit. They want you to ignore Hillary's actions, and many of you are falling for it. The media is every bit as much in bed with Hillary as the billionaires are. And about the only one not in bed with Hillary is Bill Clinton. Did you see that article? It was by Linda Tripp. It was on Breitbart, and we'll link it up on iSpyRadio.com. She talked about the thousands of women that Bill Clinton has been with. But she also talked about how the real reason that she went public was because she was convinced that if she didn't, then both she and Monica Lewinsky would be found dead. But the headline about Bill being with thousands of women got me to thinking. Hillary must really hate herself. There must be a deep underlying self-hatred going on there. What's it say about a woman who allows her husband to bed down any woman who comes along? Thousands of them. Who not only allows it to happen, but lets it happen right in the public eye. There must be some really deep self-loathing going on there. She hates herself. Hates her marriage. Hates Bill. And once you start down the path of hate, you find comfort in destruction. She hates herself so much that she's allowed herself to become a government prostitute. Sorry, but that's the hard truth. Hillary will sell herself and government favors to anyone who comes along waving a fistful of dollar bills. You tell me. How is that any different than a prostitute? She's not doing it for the good of the country, which is the psychological excuse many politicians use to get through the day. I'm selling my soul little by little, but I'm doing it for the good of the country. She sold favors to the Russians, for crying out loud. Sold uranium rights to a Russian-owned mining company. She hates herself. Is it any wonder that she hates her country? Becomes willing to sell it out, willing to see it destroyed, wanting to see once proud America humiliated on its knees. If you hate yourself to the point that you have no respect for yourself, why would it matter if America was destroyed? If you stopped caring a long time ago, why would you care about America? And that's who the left is willing to elect, except they see her as a victim, someone to be pitied because so much bad has happened to her. Let her become president, as though it will somehow make up for all the bad things in her life. But that's not how it works. You don't hand a drunk the keys to your car out of pity. Someone like Hillary long ago stopped being a victim when she chose not to leave Bill. She's not a victim. She could have left and struck out on her own, taken charge of her life. She's a willing participant, and the only thing that will satiate her hunger and self-loathing is more destruction. The left sees her as a victim. I see her as dangerous. Stay with us. We're going to look at one of her tools for destruction, her immigration plan. And welcome back. Glad you're joining us today on the iSpy Radio Show. Now, if you were with us last week, you know that we were going to continue our discussion with William Gein of ALIPAC. That's Americans for Legal Immigration Political Action Committee. Their website is alipac.us if you'd like to go visit them. Unfortunately, on the day that we were going to talk to him, he had a family emergency. So we hope that Bill and his family are okay, and our thoughts are definitely with him. Even though ALIPAC and Nealon didn't get the win in Wisconsin there against Paul Ryan, they clearly had a positive effect on the race. One, they put Paul Ryan on notice on immigration, which in the long term will help Trump get smoother sailing on his immigration plans. And the day after the election, a Breitbart article came out that said Nealon's battle put the final nail in the coffin for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, at least as far as Ryan is concerned. Paul Ryan has now seen the light and says that he's firmly against it, and that's great. So congratulations to ALIPAC for that. So let's take a look now at Hillary's immigration plan. From her website, here is her six-point immigration scam, immigration plan. One, introduce comprehensive immigration reform. Two, end the 3- and 10-year bars. Three, defend President Obama's executive actions, known as DACA and DAPA, that's D-A-C-A and D-A-P-A, against partisan attacks, meaning Republicans. Four, enforce immigration laws humanely. Five, expand access to affordable health care to all families. And finally, six, promote naturalization. So let's break these down a little bit. On point one there, introduce comprehensive immigration reform. Hillary will introduce This is on her website. It says, quote, Hillary will introduce comprehensive immigration reform with a pathway to full and equal citizenship within her first 100 days in office. It will treat every person with dignity, fix the family visa backlog, uphold the rule of law, which is kind of funny because they're breaking the law to get here, protect our borders and national security, and bring millions of hardworking people into the formal economy. So this is full-blown amnesty. Let me offer three proofs here. One, the key phrase there is, quote, bring millions of hardworking people into the formal economy. Second, on top of that, in her second point, she said that she wants to waive the 3 and 10 year bars. Now, the 3 and 10 year bars require any immigrant who stays in the United States illegally for more than 6 months, but less than 1 year, they have to leave. But then they are barred from reentering or applying for a green card for 3 years. If they stay here illegally for more than a year, they may not reenter or apply for a green card for 10 years. And she wants to waive those. The third proof of amnesty is what she does not say, which is any punishment, not even a fine, for people who have been here illegally, regardless of how much time. That's what's missing from her plan, no punishment. You know what's really funny about those 3 and 10 year bars? They were passed and signed into law by Bill Clinton in 1996. And if Hillary can't get her way, point three in her immigration scam plan is to use executive orders. She says that she will defend Obama's executive orders on DACA and DAPA, which basically prevent deportation of children who came here illegally or the parents of anchor babies. That's what those two programs are for. If these are such great programs, why isn't she saying they need to be codified into law rather than handled via executive action? Point four of her plan, enforce immigration laws humanely. We can basically kind of skim over this because it's your basic pandering. She wants to, quote, enforce refugees who seek asylum in the U.S. Let me say that again. Ensure refugees who seek asylum in the U.S. have a fair chance to tell their stories. It's not like pandering. It's pretty pathetic pandering. No comment needed there, but let's look at this, though. It says Hillary will end family detention for parents and children who arrive at our border in desperate situations and close private immigrant detention centers. Did you know that families are locked up in Holocaust-type detention centers? Well, they're not. But that's the picture that she's painting here. Number five in her plan, expand access to affordable health care to all families. Quote, we should let families, regardless of immigration status, buy into the Affordable Care Act exchanges. So let's put that in context. Someone breaks the law to come here. The law is currently a $50 fine, and coming here illegally is a misdemeanor only. But then illegals end up on food stamps and some on welfare, and that's tens of thousands of dollars per family stolen from the American taxpayer. The most interesting point, though, in her entire immigration plan is the last one. She wants to, quote, promote nationalization. It goes on to say Hillary will work to expand fee waivers and increase access to language programs to encourage English proficiency and increase outreach and education to help more people navigate the process of naturalization. Now, I gotta say, I'm definitely in favor of encouraging English proficiency. Getting back to this point of naturalization, is there a reason that she's promoting this? Because it's pretty rare to hear Democrats talking about learning English. But note that she's promoting naturalization. She's not promoting assimilation. And there's a big, big difference between the two. Naturalization means you become a citizen. Assimilization means you become an American. And everything that that means. Under Hillary's plan, Muslim refugees would become citizens, naturalize them, and everything that entails. Put them on health care, allow them to vote, and so much more. That's a world of difference between people who want to come here, who have left their homelands, who want to embrace our heritage and our culture, and throw off their past. None of that is part of Hillary's plan. It puts her politics first, not America's first. So Hillary's plan, in a nutshell, just to recap, comprehensive immigration reform, amnesty, and the 3 and 10 year bars, amnesty. Stop deportations for all except for the most violent felons. Defend Obama's executive actions on illegal immigrants. Close down detention centers. More giveaways, such as Obamacare, to illegals and promote naturalization, but not assimilation. Keep all of that in mind because up next, we'll take a look at Trump's plan. And welcome back. Really appreciate you tuning in today to the iSpy Radio Show. We're taking a deeper look at Hillary, something that the rest of the media seems to not want to do. I just finished laying out her immigration scam plan. I keep doing that. Now let's look at Donald Trump's. Here are the three core principles that he outlines there on his page. One, a nation without borders is not a nation. There must be a wall across the southern border. Two, a nation without laws is not a nation. Laws passed in accordance with our constitutional system of government must be enforced. And three, a nation that does not serve its own citizens is not a nation. Any immigration plan must improve jobs, wages, and security for all Americans. Now contrast Trump's three core principles with Hillary's unstated core principles: open borders, more executive orders, and amnesty for all. Absolutely nothing Hillary proposed will do anything to slow down immigration. It will speed it up. Compare her plan to Trump's and ask yourself if Trump's plan will do anything to slow down immigration. On his site, under A Nation Without Borders is Not a Nation, he reaffirms his intention to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. Enough said on that. Under A Nation Without Laws is Not a Nation, he says, America will only be great as long as America remains a nation of laws that lives according to the Constitution. No one is above the law. Hint, hint, Hillary. Now, for the sake of time and to help draw the comparison, I'm going to hit just the bullet points and then a couple of highlights. He wants to triple the number of ICE officers. He wants to institute a nationwide E-Verify, saying that this simple measure will protect jobs for unemployed Americans. He wants a mandatory return of all criminal aliens. He wants detention, not catch and release. He wants to defund sanctuary cities, cutting off federal grants to any city which refuses to cooperate with federal law enforcement. He wants enhanced penalties for overstaying a visa. He says millions of people come to the United States on a temporary visa, but refuse to leave without any consequence whatsoever. This is a threat to national security. He wants ICE officers to accompany local police departments and cooperate with local gang task forces. He also wants to end birthright citizenship, saying this remains the single biggest magnet for illegal immigration, and I absolutely agree. Under the category, a nation that does not serve its own citizens is not a nation, he says we need to put American workers first. Decades of disastrous trade deals and immigration policies have destroyed our middle class. The influx of foreign workers holds down salaries, keeps unemployment high, and makes it difficult for poor and working class Americans, including legal immigrants themselves and their children, to earn a middle class wage. Under this, he wants to increase prevailing wages for H-1Bs. This needs a little bit of explanation here, because he says we graduate two times more Americans with STEM degrees each year than who find STEM jobs. Yet as much as two-thirds of entry-level hiring for IT jobs is accomplished through the H-1B program. So in other words, we're graduating these STEM kids, and that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, but American companies aren't hiring our own graduates. Why? Because the foreign workers cost less. He also wants a requirement to hire Americans first. He wants to end welfare abuse. And on that, he says that applicants for entry to the United States should be required to certify that they can pay for their own housing, health care, and other needs before coming to the U.S. Yes, we used to have these kinds of requirements for immigrants. Coming to America should not be the golden ticket. He also wants a jobs program for inner-city youth. And finally, he wants immigration moderation, saying before any new green cards are issued to foreign workers abroad, there will be a pause where employers will have to hire from the domestic pool of unemployed Americans. So, you've been told by the media and a group of idiot Republicans and people like Eric Erickson and the Never Trumpers that Trump and Hillary are exactly alike. Do those two plans sound exactly alike? What do you think? Is that a liberal immigration plan like the Never Trump people want you to believe? Remember, they're telling you that so they can stay in power. I'd rather put America first. We will link up Donald Trump's and Hillary's immigration plans on iSpyRadio.com to make that easier to find. Coming up next, best-selling author Scott McEwen and his take on Hillary's emails, what they say about Libya, Syria, and Benghazi, and we'll even ask him about those mysterious deaths of people who have ties to Hillary. Stay with us. And I'd like to welcome now Scott McEwen. He is best-selling author, co-author of American Sniper, and has some books out that we'll be talking about later on. One was just released. It was Ghost Sniper, and then coming up at American Commander. Scott, it's always fun to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing quite well. We're coming up on some vacation here, and that's always a good thing. And and I know you're heading out too, so that's always good to get a little R&R. And So we've got this thing here where the Obama administration didn't really pay a ransom, even though it certainly had all the appearance of that. And I'd like to get your thoughts on that because, I mean, they claim that it was a scheduled payment from what was owed to them back in the 70s, but I think here's the tell. It was all in cash, and not just cash, but a mix of euro dollars and Swiss francs and some, I can't remember if there's American cash in that or not, but, you know, we do those things electronically now.
Yeah. You know, exactly. And you know what else it is, and I think it even goes deeper than that. If you look at all of what happened, and I was just looking at one of the comments that Tom Cotton had from the Senate, Senator Tom Cotton, when he was discussing exactly what went on here, as well as some other things. I mean, just the facts that we know of should at a minimum cause a huge congressional investigation. I believe a Department of Justice investigation and potentially, you know, grounds for impeachment proceedings against the President of the United States. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, because if you look at what we know went on, and this is just what we know went on, not what all went on, but just the facts that we know of. We know that there was literally pallets full of money in foreign currency that was delivered to the Iranians on the exact same day, but preceding the flight where the hostages were let go by the Iranians, ostensibly just out of a matter of a coincidence with the penning of this absolutely terrible Iran nuclear deal. So we have money delivered in cash, and we have hostages that are let out of the country on the exact same day at the exact same airport, I might add, that the coordination was. Yeah. So if that's not a hostage payment, then, you know, I'm a pretty stupid individual. And you could tell that to any third grader, and I'll guarantee you they'd all come to the same conclusion.
Yes.
That this was, in fact, payment for the release of the hostages. That being said, ask yourself for a moment, why was it done in cash instead of electronically? Why was that done? And I'll tell you why. First of all, there is a legal proscription by law after the Jimmy Carter regime that says we cannot pay to Iran in any way, shape, or form any dollars, period. Hence the foreign currency, hence the lack of electronic exchange, because they wanted to avoid the illegality argument that they had paid in dollars for something to the Iranian regime. So there's crime one. What they did was they just went and got foreign currency and took it in pallets instead of risking electronic, which is obviously payment with cash or the same as in dollars or whatever else. So that's why they did that. Now, the second question is, why did the simultaneous exchange take place in the way it did? Well, I mean, I don't, you know, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, I'm not going to belabor you at that point, because if you can't figure that out, then you got no reason, you know, being on the same planet. I mean, that's absolutely ludicrous. But that's why they did it in that fashion. And that's exactly how lawless this regime really is.
It really has gotten lawless. And I think that's part of the problem there is that, and why Congress doesn't seem to do anything is because they realize that this administration is just completely gone over the edge, and they're going to do what they want to do. And unfortunately, the ones that would hold them accountable, like the Department of Justice, they're not willing to do anything.
No, we have a situation where the DOJ has completely been subsumed into the executive branch. And when I say subsumed, you saw the same behavior with Eric Holder. You saw the same lawless, you know, behavior with guns, running guns in the Fast and Furious, you know, debacle. We see it here with her, Loretta Lynch, refusing to prosecute some individuals, i.e. Hillary Clinton and the Clinton administration, or the Clinton ostensible administration, for various illegal lawless acts. And, you know, and you name it. It's just, it's absolutely outrageous the amount of things that we've seen from this administration. And, you know, and unfortunately, Congress, and I have a lot of friends of mine that are in Congress. You know, I don't know. I think they're overwhelmed. I really do. And I think that they're more worried on a control level about the impression it would make on people to bring these charges in before the congressional floor rather than the future of this nation, which I find very unfortunate.
It is unfortunate because that's their whole role in being there. They are supposed to be a check on the executive branch, but there's been no checking whatsoever. We got a couple minutes here. Recently on Breitbart, One of your opinion people had written that Hillary's email hacked emails may have led to the discovery and murder of Libyan Ambassador Chris Stevens and those three American heroes at Benghazi. Do you know anything about that at all?
I've heard the same thing. And you know, frankly, it wouldn't surprise me, given the fact that, you know, they obviously had pretty good intel of where Stevens was at and when he was going to be there, when he was arriving, although it seemed to be pretty public in any event, you know, that he was in town and that they weren't using correct OPSEC, operational security, to mask that event. But, you know, of equal importance, while possibly not as devastating to the United States, in the loss of my friend Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty and Ambassador Stevens, as well as Sean, you know, is the fact that we know for a fact that the Iranian scientist that they executed last week, his name came directly from Hillary's emails that were hacked.
Yes.
So the Iranian nuclear scientist that basically ratted off the nuclear regime and what they were doing, what they were actually doing with the Iranian nuclear program, they found his name and they executed him summarily.
Yes.
So there is consequences to the stupidity that we've seen out of Hillary Clinton.
What did you mean just now when you said that there weren't any offsets in terms of protecting his location?
Well, I mean, what I say is, you know, they knew he was in town. I mean, the bad guys didn't have to look very deeply because Ambassador Stevens had done a couple of events in Benghazi that day. So they knew he was in town, and they knew generally where that temporary mission facility was going to be at, because there was bad guys, I shouldn't say bad guys, but local militia that were supposed to be guarding it. We know for a fact that when the bad guys showed up that night and killed him, that they just skinned out like a, you know, like a bunch of kids. But they were supposed to be there. So, you know, and one of the things I think the movie makes very clear, and I've discussed personally with some of the guys that were there that night, is that the alleged good guys that were supposed to be helping us and the alleged bad guys that were certainly shooting at us, it was a very difficult thing to discern which was which.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break right there. Coming up, we'll be talking about his newest books and also his movie. And what about those Hillary death squads? Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Keep an eye on big government. And we're talking today to author Scott McEwen. He is the best-selling author of American Sniper, and he's also an expert on the military tactics, strategy, and training. His most recent book is Go Sniper. It was released on July 12, 2016. We'll be talking about that in the next segment. He also has a new book coming out, American Commander, and that will be available starting in September. And Scott, during the break there, we were talking a little bit about Benghazi, and I just come across a really fascinating article talking about Benghazi itself and how that was really a hotbed. It was basically a safe zone for every kind of militant and that's out there, not just the Libyan rebels leading up to and even after the deposing of Gaddafi, but a lot of other, basically the scum of the Middle East there, all found their way into Benghazi. So we've got an American ambassador. Why on earth would we put him in the middle of that? I don't think we've ever gotten a real good answer.
Yeah. Well, I think it ultimately goes back to the arrogance and the naivete of this administration, of Hillary Clinton, and of this whole, quote, Arab Spring mentality.
Hmm.
If you recall, the Obama administration was touting the fact that there was going to be an Arab Spring where all of the rulers that we disagreed with, including Muammar Gaddafi, Egypt's ruler, as well as various others, were going to be deposed, and there was going to be a flowering of the Arabs in the spring, not unlike where they grew up, this group and the Flower Children of the 60s. And so they thought that they were going to bring that attitude to possibly the most divisive, certainly one of the most dangerous, and absolutely one of the most religiously, you know, divided parts of the world, i.e. the, you know, the Middle East. And look at the results of what they've done. Look at the results in Libya. We have a failed state, a complete fifth world mess that is nothing more than an arms dealership, you know, that basically deals arms throughout Europe and the Middle East, and stolen arms, whatever kind of arms they can get a hold of from various regimes all over the world. We know that Syria, that part of Syria that they dealt arms into now, and it's finally been revealed that that's what Clinton was really doing, that that's a complete failed state. We've got ISIS in the northern Iraq region, And we got Turkey that's on the verge of complete collapse as well.
Yeah.
That was the result of their Arab Spring.
Well, and as you say, the naivety there as well, I really think that they thought that they could depose Gaddafi and replace him with a more militant, radical Islamist, because that's always who the Obama administration favors over moderates. You certainly look at what's happening there in Syria and their support for the more radical Muslims, the fundamental ones, versus the more moderate Assad. And I think that they just thought, well, we've put those guys in power, they'll be our friends. And well, guess what? These kinds of radical Muslims, there are no friends, and they're certainly not friends to the U.S.
Nor amongst themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just constant war over there. There was another strand of emails there that Julian Assange has released, and within that, it was leading up to what happened in Libya. She was being urged by Sidney Blumenthal and a couple of other people, saying, you know, if we topple Gaddafi, that might finally be the keystone that would topple Assad as well, because he seems to be pretty secure about the only thing that could possibly inspire the Syrian rebels is if we did in fact show that it can be done over in Libya, and that was part of the reasoning apparently for her going into Libya in the first place.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, and well thought out, I think, on their part. I mean that facetiously. I mean, if you look at what happened there, you know, and how completely misadvised a lot of that was, it truly is amazing, you know. And the second thing too is, I mean, step back for a moment, Mark, and just think about something. And I've thought about this lately. Julian Assange, the character and the emails and the releases. Remember something? This is a guy that is in an Ecuadorian embassy in the heart of London who cannot leave the embassy. But for he will be arrested on the streets of London and extradited to the United States for various criminal acts that we allege he's done. And this guy is the guy that's releasing through WikiLeaks all of this information. There's something here that we don't know of. There's something here. There's a part to this puzzle that is not being told. And I'll be frank with you. I don't know the answer to it yet either. But that's going to be an interesting historical observation, I think, to see exactly how nuts case we've been seeing lately with this email stuff with Hillary, et cetera. What is actually going on here? I mean, what is actually going on in this situation?
Yeah, I think it will be fascinating in the next few years as this continues to unfold. I really hope that a Trump gets into office and breaks this wide open. You know, forget WikiLeaks. Let's get the Department of Justice involved. I mean, he again just gave an interview with Democracy Now! And said that they released more than 1,700 emails of Hillary's that are just about Libya alone. Including emails that discuss weapons flows going from Libya over to Syria and was being pushed by Hillary Clinton into jihadist hands there within Syria, including ISIS. And that he says that's there in those emails.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. That they've always denied that. But that information, frankly, came out through a buddy of mine, Brandon Webb, in SoftRep almost immediately after the whole Libyan thing went down and the ambassador was killed. Webb and his contacts, mm-hmm. Brandon and those guys all released that information that basically tied directly the flow of weapons going into Syria, and that's what they were doing. In fact, that could have been one of the reasons that they were mad at Clinton and the bunch, because there were winners being chosen on who got those high-tech weapons and losers being chosen, and some of the guys that were the losers didn't like the fact that winners were getting them.
Yes, and did you happen to see that story recently where the DNC staffer Julian Assange essentially fingers him as the leaker, and of course he ends up dead on the street? I mean, how many people have we seen end up dead because they know the Clintons?
Well, that's the other. That's the $64 question right there. Is if those deaths can be tied back to what we see as one of the craziest, most darkest times, I think, in our political history, which is what we're witnessing right now. In my estimation, some of the most lawless acts we've ever seen from this administration, and frankly, from the next one, if Hillary, God forbid, gets in, we are in a very, very difficult time in American history. As a historian, which I like to think, I hope we come out of this, and I hope we can clean this up very quickly. Because if we can't, I think the survival of the republic is at stake.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if Hillary gets elected, it's clear that this will be totally swept under the rug. and we'll never know what happened. All right, let's go and take a break here. Lots more with Scott McKeown. In the next segment, we'll be talking about his movie and his book. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today with Scott McKeown. He's co-author of the bestseller American Sniper, and he has two new books out. One was just released. It was Ghost Sniper. It continues his Sniper Elite series that was released in July. And then coming up in September will be American Commander, and we're going to talk about both of those here in a little bit. I did have a follow-up question, though, from that last segment. You know, the emails are making it pretty clear that there was the pay-for-play relationship between the Clinton Foundation and the Secretary of State office. At what point does this just, get to the point where, and I'm trying to get you to put your lawyer hat on here. At what point is there a criminality that they have completely crossed the line?
Well, I think that point has been reached and exceeded on multiple occasions. And look at the fact of what the Clinton Foundation is, first of all. This is a 501c3 foreign-based corporation in Canada that is receiving donations, hundreds of millions of dollars in donations, at a time when you have a sitting Secretary of State by the name of Hillary Clinton. Many of these donations we know of for a fact included $25 million from a Russian uranium tycoon whose uranium deals were approved and by the Clinton Foundation, or I should say by Secretary Clinton, at a time when the Clinton Foundation received money for that specific act. We're not talking about small amounts of money here either. We're talking about large chunks, yeah, millions of dollars in foreign donations for then an individual who was then sitting as Secretary of State, now running for president, and they're using those funds to fund they say that it's for charitable purposes. We know for a fact less than 10% of that money goes to charitable purposes, and there's cross employees for, yes, her and for her DNC group and everybody else that are coming in and out of the company. So they're paying the salaries for people to actively be involved in it as a result of that foundation that is being run. That in and of itself is grounds for serious review, if not criminal review, at anybody, not just Clinton, anybody. Foreign donations to a sitting or one who's going to be running for president is verboten. It's illegal.
Mm-hmm. Well, because so much of it right now is innuendo that she's making connections or that her staff is doing these things. There doesn't appear to be a single smoking gun where there's an email that says, pay me this, I give you that type of thing. But it sounds like you don't even necessarily need that particular type of smoking gun, do you?
No. I mean, why would you? Does a criminal say, look, you're giving me these drugs for the money that I'm giving you right now? Hell no. They would never admit to that. That was for something else. The fact of the matter is that they took place at the same time, and the jury makes the decision whether they can connect the dots and say that was criminal acts. I don't think it's a very big leap here. In fact, I don't think it's a leap at all.
No, it really isn't. It really is not. We want to talk about your books, though, and you've got an upcoming movie as well. First of all, let's start with the movie. How's that going, and have they ever fixed a release date for that?
No, they have not, but I'll tell you what, it's going very strongly right now, Mark, and the reason I say that is we have a script. Sheldon Turner, who has, various awards, including Academy Award nominations, has finished the script, and the script is extremely hot. And I think it's the best in that genre out there, including, some pretty tough movies that have recently come out that are really good, like the new Jason Bourne movie, and as well as the last Bond movie. But I think it's a very good script. Sony's very actively involved in moving forward with the project. And, we're about to have some announcements. It's come down to about two actors and two actresses that are going to be playing the lead. And I'm unfortunately not able to discuss that. I know it's been kind of a delay, but I see us, moving forward with that project at a minimum the beginning of next year.
Well, when those kinds of things happen, I would much rather they take their time and make the right decision versus try to rush things forward. I think so many other potentially good projects have been ruined because of that. Let's talk about your two books, though. You just had a book come out in July, The Ghost Sniper. Talk to us a little bit about that. And, one of the things that I really have to compliment you on is you've really managed to keep the character of Gil Shannon fresh. And that's not always easy to do over the course of several novels, because the hero in a novel, they're changed by the course of the novel and the events and what happens and also their own actions and decisions. That's their character arc. How have you been able to keep him interesting and avoid a static character?
You know, I think that the guy is a fun character because he's so much like the SEAL Team guys that I know. In fact, he's a SEAL Team 6 sniper, obviously, that's retired working for the CIA now. But, you know, I know so many guys that do things all the time that I'm able to talk to and discuss the different crazy things that they do on a daily basis out in the world today. And there's no lack of bad guys out there, financiers, bombers, et cetera, that are being hunted right now. So I'd like to take as much of that information that's in the black zone and fictionalize it in the Gil Shannon character. And, you know, and this one is based in Mexico on the narco trafficking and the takeover of a Mexican town is the ending scene. And if you look at Mexican history recently, I'm not that far off of what's taking place down there. There have been some huge, crazy events where entire towns have been taken over by these narco traffickers. And really the crescendo third act in this movie is based on one of those interactions.
Well, you know, you're talking about real life events there and snipers and all the things that they have to go through. And it kind of got me back to what we discussed earlier about the potential Clinton hit squad that may have taken out the DNC staffer. Would that surprise you? I'm trying to phrase this somewhat gently, but would it surprise you that somebody around Hillary Clinton had actually formed that kind of team?
You know, what's really crazy, and I say this honestly, it would not at all. It would not at all. The lust for power that we've seen, particularly from that group that's in that Clinton group that's there, I found it's been, you know, absolutely amazing to see just the things that we've seen with fundraising and the Clinton Foundation, the hundreds of millions of dollars, and, you know, the donations from international terrorist groups and affiliations with international terrorist groups. I've seen worse things for the United States and for the creation and long-term life of this country done by this woman as a Secretary of State. I would say if you told me that the DNC murdered somebody, I would put that on a lower level than some of the things we already know that have done.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that to say that man's life was not worth something. I'm saying in the grand scheme of things, we've already seen acts that are much more treasonous to this country.
Good point. So you have another book coming up in September, and that's American Commander. Now, is that fiction or nonfiction? It's nonfiction, isn't it?
Nonfiction, based on the life of Ryan Zinke, Navy SEAL commander, 23 years with SEAL Team 6, was there in the transition between Dick Marcinko's SEAL Team 6 and the current group of guys that killed bin Laden, saved Captain Phillips, et cetera. So it's really the book that kind of defines the change in SEAL Team 6 from what I originally used to like to refer to them as the, quote, pirates that they were when Dick Marcinko began the group. Very hard men, very tough men, you know, developing some of the systems that would allow people to underway board ships and take over huge ships that had been taken over by terrorists, you know, be they luxury liners or whatever else that we saw them originally start their job to do, to today having the most sophisticated, highest trained, most, you know, electronically savvy, you know, internet savvy, everything else. The group that now is at SEAL Team 6, the warriors that fight there now are so good. It's unbelievable. And really, Ryan was there for that transition. And I like, you know, I like it because it really kind of describes everything that went into the creation of what's now known by the world to be the world's most dangerous fighting force against evil.
Well, certainly looking forward to when that comes out, just getting that in-depth look. I mean, so many of your books already do that for us, but I mean, to really look at the actual SEAL Team 6, I think that'll be fascinating. Scott, thank you so much for your time today. It's always a pleasure, and have a great vacation.
Thank you guys so much, and you enjoy the rest of your summer. And keep bringing the word. We need to support this country. We're in tough times right now.
Oh, we sure are. Thank you for joining us today on the iSpy Radio Show. Before I go, I'd like to mention this is our last show for August. We're going to be doing a couple of best ofs. But do be sure to check iSpyRadio.com for links to Hillary's immigration plans and Trump's. And you can compare them. You can decide whether or not Hillary and Trump are exactly like the Never Trumpers want you to believe. And be sure to share those, because as we say every week, the best information is you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a faith that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.